Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with the help of Hims. They provide access to personalized treatments so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. That's it, kids. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays, doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of your own home. Fill out an intake form, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. The process is 100% online, which means getting started has never been more convenient. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Plus, treatment options start at $35 per month. Hims has helped hundreds of thousands of men get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinking bros. That is Hims.com/drinking bros for personalized hair loss treatment options. Hims.com/drinking bros. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. We are live on Election Hangover Monday. Who better to have on the show than Nick DiPaolo? How are you, sir?
Very good. How are you, fellas?
I'm doing good. Yeah. No lie, this is a big deal for me.
Yes.
A very, very big deal. You're one of the very best to do it of all time, and especially with over 800,000 podcasts. There's a lot of hacks out there, and I feel like we're talking to one of the godfathers here. You're one of the best to do it on radio. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, thank God for the podcast. I didn't really feel the pinch with the COVID thing and
right.
Yeah, same. Doing stand up and this thing started to take off at about the same time. So,
I feel like this medium is perfectly suited for you.
Well, people like him for sure.
Exactly.
Like, it's no surprise to me that people like Bill Burr thrives in this environment, or Nick DiPaolo. I mean, it makes total sense because independent media is kind of inoculation against politically correct bullshit, right?
Right.
I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You can't cancel my show because I'm the one that fucking makes it. So
you
good
wouldn't
luck.
See us on anywhere else. Let's be honest.
Right. Yeah, you're right, because I've had radio shows and everybody said what you just said when I said, yeah, I'm going to the internet. You know, I wasn't paying enough attention to YouTube early in my career. But you're right. Everybody's like, oh, that's perfect for you. But now, even now, fucking YouTube's, you know, fucking with my head, kicking me off every once in a while. And, you know.
Yes. So. And the same happens to us. The funny thing is like our show, we've got 10.3 million listeners. YouTube, we're barely scratching about 80,000 subscribers. And it's the same thing where we got shadow banned before the election for about 6 weeks. We've also had a ton of controversial guests on, like Alex Jones and Milo and all those guys. And
yep.
I'm not going to stop having guests or people that I find interesting on my show just because an algorithm doesn't want me to. Audio is still the bread and butter for all of this. So, you know, video is a bonus, but we're with you as far as the YouTube pain. Like, if we would have known this years ago, dude, we would have gone all in.
Yeah.
Exactly. I got with my radio gig in New York. I got ostensibly I was fired for a tweet, but I don't think that was the real case because the show was, you know, right wing and it was getting very popular. I jumped over two shows in about a month there, Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they were letting me do my thing. And then there was that shooting in El Paso at the Walmart.
Yep.
So like a good comedian, I fucking jumped on Twitter before the bullets were even stopped. And I just remember looking up at the TV and it said active shooter at Walmart. So I jumped on Twitter. I didn't know at this point, we didn't know who was dead, or if there, anybody was dead. And I said, active shooter at Walmart. He's the first person to ever shop at Walmart whose lifestyle could be considered active. Mm. And, you know, that was, even Twitter didn't give me any guff for that. But fucking the radio station booted me.
Yeah.
So there goes 150 G's. So I started selling coke again to kids.
And that business isn't dying anytime soon.
No.
I've got two kids. Everybody, all the kids need cocaine.
Yeah,
so.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Mandatory at this point, the way that I feel. What was the other tweet that you got fired for? Was it that one or was it another one?
That was it. Oh, wait a minute. I think you're right.
Yes, it was something else.
No, you're right. It was the oh my God, I can't even remember why I get fired anymore. What the fuck? I better lay off the vape. No, you're right. It was right after George
Floyd.
Barbara Bush died, and some fat Latino professor at like San Jose State went on and said, I'm glad she's dead. She raised a bunch of racists and Nazis and shit. So I said, and this wasn't long after Parkland, I said, dear future school shooters, in the future, contain your work to the faculty room at San Jose State, Harvard, Yale.
Yeah. And, you know. And then and
everybody seemed to enjoy it. And, but even a couple of my faggy fans are like, well, that was a good joke, but the timing was a little... You fucking idiots. That's why it was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did it 30 seconds after she said the same with the Walmart thing. I go, that's why it's funny. Anybody can do that joke 6 months down the road. That doesn't take any balls.
I feel like everybody you've worked with in your entire career and everything in your entire career has been controversial. But the two things that got you were tweets at the end of the day and not actually what you said on radio.
Yeah, that's true, which tells you what about Twitter and fucking social media. Boy, if it's done anything, it's exposed what douchebags fucking sit at home on computers. I'm glad I beat them up when I was a kid, those fucking nerds.
Yeah, look, we're bullies.
They had it coming. It was a down payment.
Yeah, I agree. Look, we're bullies. We shove nerds and all that stuff, but that's not allowed anymore. Clearly, we are in a different era right now. I mean, dude, I go back to your show with Artie. I mean, you guys were,
yeah,
that was some of the craziest shit on the planet, and nothing, you get flagged nothing for that, but two tweets is what got you.
Yeah, the one I just mentioned is the one, but again, ostensibly that's why they fired me, but my contract was up in a couple months and I just think my show was too right wing, you know. Right.
I mean, there's a decent chance the inverse of that happened with Rappaport at Barstool, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he was going pretty hard anti-Trump, and they didn't seem too happy about it.
Right.
And nobody gets fired for being anti-Trump.
Yeah.
Fucking, let me tell you about Barstool. I'm sick of hearing how fucking edgy they are. They called me up a couple of years ago. I lived in Westchester, fucking hour out of the city. Mm-hmm. It's pouring out to come in and do an interview. It cost me $60 to park. I go in and do an interview with these so-called two edgy guys about your age. And they brought up, well, you have to admit you're lucky to be born white. And I said, why the fuck do I have to admit that? And then I don't know, I did a couple of domestic violence jokes and shit, and they got all fucking nervous. And
no, that happens.
And they never aired it.
No, happens. Shit. We actually had a live show sponsored by White Claw one time, and we did a bunch of Anne Frank jokes, and they didn't like that too much.
Oh, yeah. Too soon?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how long do you have to wait?
Jesus
it's
Christ.
Been fucking decades now.
It wasn't Barney Frank. It was Anne Frank, you asshole.
Yeah, we were on a roll that day. We had two Holocaust jokes, I believe, in the first 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we had a guy that just got out of prison for attempted murder on the show. Weird how White Claw wasn't that happy with us.
No, they didn't think it represented the brand.
No.
Is that the toilet paper company?
No, it's the beverage, and Dan's still drinking to this day. Dan holds no hard feelings.
I don't do politics in the way I spend my money, really.
Right. But
it's got to be pretty egregious. Like, if I need to pour whatever into my body to make everything okay.
Yeah.
And I don't care about politics then.
No.
Like, it's instinct. It's human survival. It's all.
But nobody's got fired for being too liberal. You know, Rappaport makes me sick with his shit.
Ooh. He's, I mean, he goes.
I'd like to hear you guys on a show
hard.
Together.
He goes hard on Instagram and all that stuff. Yeah, do you pay attention to Rappaport anymore? Like,
No. Yeah. Just seeing his Mobies and his Rolls made me sick to my stomach. I'm like, ugh. Oh, making fun of Republicans. Wow, what a fucking edgy target, old white people.
To his credit, Patton Oswalt makes that joke that he just made frequently. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm super edgy. Fucking telling a joke, an anti-Trump joke in a room full of fucking liberals in Hollywood. Yeah, that's really something to be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, what happened to comedy, Nick? What the fuck happened?
What happened? Patton Oswalt, people like that. That's what happened. Fucking Pete Holmes. I blame it on him.
That's a pretty specific. I mean, Pete Holmes is a pretty affable guy. What happened there?
Here's the thing.
He's a fucking half a fucking faggot. I hate him. Apparently he doesn't like me either, but that's who makes it, you know, fucking guys who are heterosexuals, guys who are harmless. Pete may or may not be gay, and you know, you get that, and that's what Hollywood loves. And Judd Apatow, he fucking damaged our hard drive, and you can go on and on, but
don't you love those guys like Judd Apatow and Amy Schumer, who made their bones originally by being super fucked up, doing super fucked up comedy? Then all of a sudden they get a conscience or whatever, like, oh, you guys are terrible. You shouldn't be doing this. Like, dude, this
Wait a minute, you're rich. Judd Apatow did super fucked up comedy?
Well, I mean, just he played.
He did
really,
Anchorman.
He played really hard into stoner culture. They got away with a lot of shit back then. You couldn't get away with. There's some blackface in his history and blah blah blah, which is all funny, right? It's funny because it was funny. Right. That's the only. Yeah. The only
I want to know the context of the blackface with Judd Apatow. I guarantee it was making fun of white people.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, of course.
Well, that doesn't count. It's like comics who talk about race and shit all over white people. Oh, he's edgy. He talks about race. I'm fucking edgy about that. There isn't, you know? Fucking do it in New York at a comedy cell, and there's a table of black people in front of you, or Dominicans. That's fucking edgy.
You know what I heard? One of my favorite live performances I've ever seen was Norm MacDonald in San Francisco, right? Yes. At Cobb's Comedy Club, and he just goes in right off the bat hard on transgender people.
Yeah.
Starts talking all kinds of shit. And I'm like, yes. this is the place to fucking do this. Like, if you don't need to.
That's right.
If you're telling anti-trans jokes in Alabama, you might be a piece
preaching
of shit.
You might be
kind of an asshole, but if you're doing it in front of people that need to hear that shit, the need to realize that life is not that serious, that's the place to do it. That's what, I mean, Norm's a great fucking comedian. I've seen him 5 times, every single time.
It's my favorite.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Same. And look, you've worked with the greatest, who are still the greatest. Like, I know you're pretty close with Bill Burr. Billy Burr,
he's as funny as that. He's like, Billy Burr is like everybody I grew up with in Massachusetts. Like all my friends in high school, you're looking exactly, he looks, sounds like him, looks like him. But even Billy is a little more PC. They make him out to be the bad boy. But he did a lot of shit, again, that was kind of, you know, poking fun at white people that I didn't really. But he does it so brilliantly. He's so goddamn funny.
Yeah.
But I don't see him as the fucking bad boy that they make him out to be. I'm the one who on Tough Crowd in 2000, 20 years ago, I was saying shit about cultural Marxists. And I told some black girl, we showed a clip on Tough Crowd. The segment was about black people being followed in stores. And we showed a clip. Somebody following a black person, and there's some black woman comedian on there going nuts, and I said, stop fucking stealing.
What was her response?
Of course, it was a nice, you know, a typical non-emotional response. I think she tried to kick me in the balls or whatever.
Honestly,
she lost her shit or whatever, but I was saying that before I had any money.
Yeah,
that's what people go, they always point out Dennis Miller and Tom Selleck, who other right wingers, Die Hard, what's his name?
Bruce Willis.
I said they all had, you know, $40 million in the bank before they came out as a public.
Right.
I was doing it before I had any money.
Shit, even 50 Cent came out over the taxes, man. Come on.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
I'm not paying 62% of my money to the government. Sorry.
The rappers, Trump made inroads, you know, with the black community, and you're not going to hear that anywhere else.
No, not at all.
By the way, Tough Crowd is one of the best TV shows that's ever been on.
Absolutely. Like, no doubt about it.
As long as The Daily Show has been on, and I was a fan of Jon Stewart because I thought he was pretty intellectually honest, even though he came to conclusions differently than I did. But the new guy's terrible,
obviously.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But Tough Crowd should have been on as long as The Daily Show has been on. That is one of the most important possible shows that could ever exist, particularly in today's climate. Just hear
Exactly right. I still get tons of emails going, why don't they bring it back? The show is needed right now. And, but once again, literally the people at Comedy Central, again, fucking lefties, actually said to Colin Quinn after like the third episode, "You guys talk too much about race. Leave that to Chappelle." Can you fucking imagine saying that to Colin Quinn, who literally has black relatives from the islands and went to school in Brooklyn with black people and Puerto Rican? Can you imagine saying that to Colin? Leave that. Yeah, so that's what you're dealing with. That's who runs the fucking networks and shit.
Yeah, it's really dumb. You know, one of the most apparent signs of closeness between two people is how easily they can talk shit to each other in the most personal way. Like, I can say whatever the fuck I want to you, basically, because we're friends. Now, we shy away from that behavior. Why? What is the expectation there? We get farther apart, right?
Yeah.
That would make sense. The more difficult it is for us to laugh and joke and make fun of our individual experiences on a day-to-day basis, including race, culture, music, whatever the fuck it is. It doesn't matter. Yeah. When we lose the ability to do that, then we lose that closeness. Does that not seem reasonable to you that we would lose that? So we're talking about all this division and shit going on now. Like, see, you can't do this and you can't do that now because of this. Like, well, we can't do this because you stopped letting us do this other thing. That's what we believe. I believe that it's not even about direct and honest communication. It's about, look, man, life sucks frequently. And if it can suck a little less if we make some fun of it. So let's all do that together. It's a good way to learn about other shit. Why can we not just do that?
We can't. By the way, I think it changed in 2015, like when, or 2016, when Trump was running, and then he ended up winning. I think that's when comedy really fucking changed and everybody got sensitive about everything.
It was before that. It depends what level of sensitivity you're talking about. But look, I started open mics in 1988. And I remember after like my third open mic, somebody coming up to me. This is how I knew it was in my blood. And somebody said, "This is 1988, guys. This is fucking, what's that, 40 years ago?" And somebody said to me, you're really you're not politically correct at all. That's the future." And I said, I literally remember saying to the guy, I said, I don't think that. I said, "I think it's going to be a long time before we get through this." No way did I know we were going to get to the point where a guy could point to his dick and go, "My name's Betty." Fucking,
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to get to this point. But, so it's been coming a long time. Trump, obviously, just because, and here's why they hate him. And I said it before he got elected. He's a blonde haired, blue eye, alpha male billionaire Catholic. That is the fucking devil to people on the left. He embodies the devil to them. Political correctness is about one thing. It shuts up white straight males.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. I love when I see minority comedians complaining about political correctness. I laugh my balls off. Female comedians. Have you ever seen a gay comedian get in trouble making fun of straight people, or a black comic getting in trouble for making in front of white people?
No.
Yeah, no, it doesn't fucking happen. It was to shut us up, and that's how it evolved.
And the other part about it is, if you call out a comedian that you dislike who is of a different race, you'll take hell for that too. Like,
of course,
Leslie Jones. Like, I don't understand the Leslie Jones thing. I never have. I never will. I don't understand her stand up on SNL. I realized she was friends with Chris Rock, and that's how she got that gig. But I don't understand the Leslie Jones thing. And like, every time you say it, people are like, "Whoa, you're racist." No, she's just not fucking funny. It has nothing to do with race. I just don't find her funny at all.
No, she's not. She doesn't have a talented bone in her fucking body. She should be playing tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, are you a Patriots fan, Nick?
Yeah.
Yes, I was born in the Boston area, and I sure am.
So do you want to talk about how that's going right now?
Yeah, it's not going well.
Because I feel like you're on a good anger train right now, and I want to hear...
anger train.
I call it anger train. I mean, I pretty much live.
Mode I've been in about 20 years. Well, yeah, as far as the Patriots go, people are talking about like it's the same Patriots. Right. First of all, a lot of people don't know, half their team opted out. And I'm talking Chung, the strong safety, yep, who's been there for like 14 years. Dante Hightower, like all-stars. They opted out of the season this year. And they're playing all these young guys. And the COVID thing fucked them up too. But even Bill Belichick came out and said, look, we sold our soul. You know how they're the best at drafting people and using the salary cap and shit. Mm-hmm. But he said, we're going to go through a dry period now, whatever. Right. So,
yeah.
Look, guys, I was following the Patriots when I was six. That's 1968. I sat through the lean years. I have heroin marks on my arm from the early 70s, how fucking bad they were. And I trust me, they can go 0 for, 16 for the next 10 years. I am fine with what I saw. Come on. We have Philly championships, and it was never a football town until Brady took over. And I'm not upset. Even when they lost the Super Bowl a couple years ago, it bothered me for about 3 minutes. And I'm like, okay, see you next year or whatever.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
I mean,
he's got six rings, for Christ's sake, Brady.
It's Liberace. It's true. Look, I'm a Falcons fan, and my life has been a living hell that I have to wake up to every single morning.
Even when it looked like it was going to go well, it didn't.
I was at the 28-3 game, by the way. So I was at the Super Bowl.
Oh, Jesus.
Had a nice, cushy suite with Fox and all that stuff. It was great. A buddy of mine was on Lethal Weapon and hooked and he hooked it up. He was rigged on Lethal Weapon, so he hooked that up at the time. It was fantastic. One thing I do want to say is Mark Wahlberg was the box over from us, and that bullshit excuse that his kids were sick and that they had to leave, they were sick of seeing them get their ass beat, and he pulled those kids out of the stadium is what happened. He left at that 28-3. I want that on the record. That was it. There was nothing wrong with them.
He left, really?
Yes, he left. He physically left, and so did all the Patriots fans. So when I was in the stadium, all of them left, and because of the security of Super Bowl.
Not all of them left, because I know plenty of people that went and they stayed.
There was a lot.
One of Mark Wahlberg's kids died of cancer like 8 minutes after the game, so I don't think he was bluffing.
Really? That's not true. You fucking liar.
The fuck you actually believe?
You just ruined his whole day.
Well, he's got 90.
Like, he's not going to recover from that now.
I know. He started smiling when I said that.
He's got 90 kids. Like, it's possible. By the way, he might have forgot a kid who died of cancer.
By the way, to what you said a minute ago, you're right. The Patriots haven't been one of those teams that go out. They're not the Yankees, that's for sure. They're not even the Red Sox. They haven't gone out and made huge acquisitions that have really impacted their team. They've had Brady, and they've drafted linebackers in the and offensive linemen in the first round every single year.
Yep,
and they've not ever drafted a running back in the first round.
No,
ever.
Those players are interchangeable.
Yeah. Yeah.
To Belichick. He's that friggin' good.
So you got to say he's the best ever then, right?
I would say that. By a country mile.
Is there anyone?
And I'd say that if I was from, Baltimore. I mean, I've been watching this shit I'm 58. For literally 52 years I've been following this league. And to do it, to be a dynasty is one thing in the 70s, like the Steelers were.
Right.
But to do it during free agency, where you have different players every year and different salary caps, and they've changed the whole, to do it then, that's, even the other players say that's, it's never going to be done again, I don't think.
I don't know how you could.
I don't either. No, not in this day and age.
No.
The Chiefs look great with Mahomes. It's just a question of their motivation and whether or not they want to play. Are you a gambling guy? Like, do you bet every weekend?
One sec before I answer that. It's funny you mentioned Mahomes, because I was working in Kansas City this past weekend.
Mm.
And every show I would come out and go, hey, guys, congratulations on the Super Bowl. And they would go crazy. And then I go, I just read an article that Pat Mahomes is sucks a dick. Did you read this? He's got a life partner. And they would turn on me like, fuck.
Oh, easily. Are you kidding me? Mahomes is there. He's their Jesus there. And I get it.
Oh, yeah. No, he's awesome, man. Watching him play, it's like he's running around like he's with playing with his family in the front yard. He is so fun to watch.
He really is.
I used to gamble on football. Yeah, when I first got out of college, I enjoyed that. But I don't do it anymore. I'm just in a pool,
Yeah,
gotcha.
Well, you said you were doing stand-up in KC this weekend. You got something coming up pretty soon in Vegas, right, on the 21st of November?
Yes. I'm at the Plaza Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas on November 20 and 21. And on 21, which is Saturday night, I'm doing a live stream of the show. So people who can't get to see me live if I haven't come to their state, or even fans I have in England and Ireland and Australia, they're going to, you know, they can pay for it on November 21st, live from Las Vegas. And I can't wait to do it because I've played the room before. And it's my manager's room. It's a beautiful showroom. They shot scenes from Casino in this room. It's like old school Vegas.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
it looks like Sinatra was there last weekend. And we're going to have we'll have a good live audience, a good size audience, and we're going to stream it out to the world. So that's November 21st. And I'm moving from YouTube at the end of the year to my own platform called vcomicsgym.com. Because of, you know, obviously big tech doesn't like guys like us.
Censorship, yeah.
So I'm going to go to thecomicsgym.com. It's a platform that my manager created with some guys, and I'll be totally, you know, free.
Let me ask you, is that the future? Because, again, we're friends with Alex Jones here, and we're in Austin, Texas, and he's got, obviously, InfoWars is his .com.
Yeah.
That's his own site that he streams off of all day. And he's got, what, 8-9 shows that go all day over there? Is that the future? Because, look, I don't know what Google's going to do after this. Like, are they going to be happy if that Biden wins and they're like, oh, say whatever you want? Or they're going to keep up with the censorship?
Well,
I'm not sure.
How many times have you given somebody power and they've given it up without a fight?
Not once.
Okay, good.
Not once.
Let's move on from that idea then.
That's actually a great point. They are you shitting me? This is a wet dream for them. And you'd hope somebody on the Republican side, right, would break it up, but they're in on it too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, all this ton of money comes in from big tech, and there's friggin' Republican congressmen getting in the way of legislation to break these assholes up. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. So, I don't even know if Biden's going to win the fucking thing.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Let me ask you.
Let's keep plugging this. So you're going to remove all your video content off YouTube, but it's still going to be on regular podcast apps, right?
It will.
Okay.
I believe. And we're going to stay on. I'll be on both until the end of this year.
Okay.
You know, use YouTube to get the word out there and whatnot. Then it'll be solely thecomicsgym.com.
And you have other people signed up on this, Jim Florentine, if you heard a prank call done anywhere between the 1990s and now, it was either him or the Jerky Boys. Right?
And
then Artie Lang and a bunch of other people are on there as well.
Yeah, so, Artie Lang's going to be on there. And some up and newcomers will give guys a place to, you know. But yeah, as far as the future goes, this might be the future for stand-up. I mean, I got to believe this COVID shit's going to go away eventually. But in the meantime, in the near future, streaming live, and it's not a bad thing money-wise if enough people tune in, you know?
No, it's definitely not. Yeah, and I agree with you.
For like a guy like me who's been around forever, so.
Well, of course. I mean, if Biden wins, then the COVID restrictions are going to go away. Some of them will stay, but a lot of – because he can't afford a bad economy, right?
Sure.
The first 100 days of a presidency, if your economy sucks, then
that's the kiss of
death.
Well, listen, it's not even about Biden or Trump, and he doesn't give a fuck about the economy. The reset button's already been pushed for socialism. They don't give a fuck about it. They want everybody on the dole. That's why all the small businesses get crushed during this COVID thing. And you have large corporates. Somebody said to me, and I looked at it, there's a quote that tyranny, the road to tyranny is paved through big business. And if you look at your history, it's true. You got like Amazon and Nike, giant corporations, with the fucking Black Lives Matter slogan all over their website. Literally a Marxist organization being promoted through big business. So I don't think Biden and the rest of the left give a shit about the economy. They want us all on the dole eventually. But that's how much it's changed, I think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I've been talking about for, a year and a half now, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Just the gradual march towards more less independence on behalf of the individual. So we talked about a lot more after the George Floyd stuff kicked off, because people were wondering out loud, how do we fix some of these problems we have with regard to I think it's income inequality. I don't think any of these other issues matter.
Mm-hmm.
The only color that matters is green.
Right.
And the fact that we have Our best effort, when I say best, I kind of mean that tongue in cheek. Our best effort as a society has been for the Republicans to largely ignore the issue when they had the solution, which is very frustrating because the solution is individual liberty and entrepreneurship. And the left has just tried to keep them on the government tit so they can keep that vote in November. Both of those things are fucked up. And I just want to talk about how, like what you just said, there's so many people on both sides of the aisle that are in bed with these big businesses. And what the fuck does that have to do with America? America is about fucking, it's about individuals. Mm-hmm. Like this country only works if it works for everybody. That's the whole fucking point. Now you can, if it doesn't work out because you're a piece of shit, that's your fucking problem, right?
Right.
But if you give effort, you should be able to succeed here. That's how we set this shit up. And we've taught people now that one, on one side, well, you should expect to succeed. That's a very dangerous way to believe. People like that don't win fucking championships. I can tell you that much.
Well, the left, what they've been promising for 50 years is equality of outcome, not opportunity.
Right.
It's always been about opportunity. And, but now the left and the far left, they want equality of outcome guaranteed, which the only way to get that is socialism, where everybody right. gets paid the same. Everybody dresses the same. You live in a fucking mediocre world.
Right.
I mean, it's not like we don't have history to look back and see, you know, that's what freezes my ass. It's like, what the fuck? Really? It's not going to work, especially with the DNA this country has, where we came about by swearing off big government. So,
right.
But we're a long ways from that now. And as long as they control the mainstream media, social media, and Hollywood, you know, it's going to come down to violence.
Yeah, probably. I mean, look, it's interesting you say the right versus the left, and here's why: because I don't think Republicans represent the right in this country anymore, frankly.
No, not anymore. You're right.
I don't think it's even close because...
No, you're right.
Like, the Department of Homeland Security, for example, the biggest expansion of federal government in history happened under Bush.
Yeah.
The debt since Trump took office has skyrocketed. Now, maybe you could say it's economic stimuluses and things like that, but still, the debt has increased a lot recently. So neither one of these sides are getting it right. So what do you think now? Like, I assume you're probably a Republican, but what the fuck do you do as someone where nobody in government is now representing you? Like, how do you approach that?
Well, there's only one solution. I'll have to run for office.
Is that true? So we talk, Dan and I talk about this all the time. And we almost did in our town in Wilmington where we just came from.
I'm fucking kidding.
Oh, you are. I
hey,
think
fellas,
you'd win.
It's a comedy show. Hello.
I think you'd win, though, dude. Like, is that crazy of me? Like, because look, Trump made it happen, and he actually won. If you ran, I think with your fan base and who you are personally, I think
I'd
you'd
be
win.
Dead in 5 minutes.
But don't you think you'd have a better shot? Because right now it's about fame and your brand and getting your name out there. Everybody knows you. Like, you've been famous for fucking ever. I think you would actually win.
I'm flattered by that, but I don't believe that at all. When I started working with my current manager about 3.5-4 years ago, it's the first thing he said. He goes, the comedy world knows you, but nobody else fucking knows you. And he was right. I mean, I'm in a left-wing business, and they have a nice way of keeping you down. But I really am not as famous as I always have anecdotes like my parents are like, we just went to the airport in Philadelphia, and a couple of the TSA people looked at our IDs and said, are you the comedian's parents? And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, that makes me Tom Cruise, a fucking. but I'm flattered. But yeah, no, with a guy with my attitude, if there was a, and I think there's some coming up, you know, it would be a good time to run because Trump is exposed. Just how fucking America hating the left is.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I knew it was bad, but holy moly.
They hate every, America hates Washington, D.C. at
That's
large.
Right. Yeah,
I don't think
that's
it,
right.
Like, it's very interesting because people on the right and left hate it for different reasons. That should probably, if you're a reasonable human being, like, there's this old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right?
Yes.
So how do we, as people who aren't that far apart in most ways, people like young people in this country today and some mentally disturbed older people think that socialism might be some kind of fucking like broad path to victory for us. That is ridiculous to think that because we have decades of country after country after country turning into fucking oligarchies and despotic regimes and things. It's nonsense. It's never worked, and it's not because it hasn't been tried properly. It's because you can't get fucking 30 million to 130 million to 300 million to a billion people in the same place that agree on everything and everybody has good motives. Socialism depends on one key feature. Everybody involved has a good motive. That is ridiculous to assume that.
Right.
That is absolute nonsense, right? So you, what do? You take something like capitalism where you can assume most people are fighting on their own behalf and find a way to push that energy through a filter that has the best outcome for most people. That makes sense. That's just basic logic, right? We're not talking about fucking solving a Rubik's Cube with your hands tied behind your back. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or juggling with your dick, which is hard to do.
I mean, I've done it, obviously, with a live chainsaw, but that's my own problem.
Well,
lost a ball.
I wouldn't do that. Lost
a ball, RIP. But what? Let me ask you this. Why do you think people want to give socialism a shot, Nick? I mean, it clearly hasn't worked anywhere in the world in the history of mankind. Why do they think it would magically work in this day and age in America?
Well, because for the last 50 years, this isn't a recent phenomenon. They've been brainwashed. It's been going that way. The fucking libs got a hold of all our institutions, the media, academia, you know, Hollywood, and there's been a collective brainwashing going on for at least 50 years, and it's finally come to fruition. They actually believe this shit, and that's why. And there's enough dumb people, excuse me, there's enough dumb people in this country, obviously. You know, if the Democrats didn't have mainstream media on their side, I don't think they'd ever win a fucking, even be in an election. But that it's the idiot box, man. It's still the TV. People hear it on TV and they take it as gospel. And everything you hear on TV when it comes to news is fucking left-wing propaganda. And it's been like that forever. So I think it's coming to fruition. But I hear like young kids now, like real young kids, like in their, you know, it's starting to turn.
Yep.
So I read a couple articles where younger people, younger than millennials, are starting to feel differently and starting to see the light a little bit. But again, they're going to go to college and come back vegans.
Well, no, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, though, whatever Gen Y, Z, whatever the fuck we're on.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out because kids in that age group are generally, they're contrarians, right? Yeah. Like they just want to, it's so difficult to develop your identity at that age. Then being different is the best way to just be your own separate person. It makes sense.
Well, now their parents decide their identity when they're six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, played with a doll for 5 minutes. Slap a pussy on him.
And Mario Lopez says, I don't know if it's a good idea for 3-year-olds to be deciding their gender, and he gets crucified for that. That is a pretty reasonable statement.
Has he decided his gender yet? That's my question.
Not yet. Whatever it is, though, I want it. He looks great.
He's a very pretty man.
He's a pretty little man.
I miss the curls in the back from Saved by the Bell, though.
I do, too. I could have grabbed those curls from behind.
Yeah.
I'd fuck Mario Lopez.
He probably had the best mullet in TV history. Can you think of a better mullet?
Oof. I'd go... I mean, if we're going gay man, I would say
any man.
Travolta in the 70s on Welcome Back, Carter, maybe.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
That's about the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, I'd go with any hockey player in the 70s from Canada.
Yeah, but those are going to be hard to fuck. Like, you want somebody you can dominate pretty quickly. Travolta. Yeah. Travolta's a good one to get behind.
You couldn't fuck Tiger Williams? Come on.
I want to talk about the media again real quick with how crazy it has gotten. One of the things I said earlier on this morning show on Ross Patterson Revolution was the fact that Trump got the most votes of any sitting president with the media against him every single facet. Like, to me, I found that unbelievably impressive. I can't believe that a guy was able to essentially beat the media enough to get the most votes of any sitting president. And the other thing that I found shocking about the votes was that Biden got 9 million more than Obama did when he ran. And that was like the left hero, you know, that was the guy. And he didn't campaign or do anything. Were you surprised by that at all?
Well, what does that tell you, though? You know, it just goes to show you how powerful. It's the ideology, and Biden didn't have to say anything. That's when you have social media and the mainstream media and all that shit. I don't think it matters who's running. That message is out there. But yeah, Trump, I mean, people love him. I guess Biden got more popular votes. But I mean, like you said, for somebody, for a president, for a Republican who's the mainstream media hates, and they took it to a new level of hate, it's unbelievably impressive to get 70 million votes. Mm. And he probably got more than that.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
This when is, all the dust clears.
Honestly, this one's weird to me. I understood, like, Trump derangement syndrome, I believe, is a real thing. People have lost their minds over some of this stuff. And I did figure people would be more motivated maybe to vote this year than they were in the previous election. But that seems, maybe they just weren't, they hated Hillary that much, which is understandable because we all do. But 138 million people voted last time in 2016. Over, like, 147 million have already voted this year.
Right.
Like, we're 9 million votes ahead. It seems very, I don't believe that when I see it. I don't believe that 9 million more people decided to vote. That's like fucking, what, 4.5% more people or something. That seems very bizarre to me.
No, you're right. I mean, if you're looking, I was doing a bunch of stories today on the show. You know, Nevada, they have all these votes that they can't connect to a human signature or whatever.
Right.
They were counted by a machine instead of humans. And in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, there were counties. On average, counties all over the country have a usually 50 to 60, 62% turnout during a presidential election. They had counties in Wisconsin where 96, 97% turnout.
I can tell you, I've actually...
That is such horseshit.
I actually worked on a political campaign statewide in Wisconsin in 2012. And I can tell you that race was a lot more contentious than this race was. And there's no fucking way.
Right. Yeah, what was the vote count? Do you remember?
I don't remember what the vote count was because it was just the recall election for Scott Walker back then. But,
oh, gotcha.
It was there. We definitely didn't see turnout like that.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, turnout was a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because people didn't believe in the cause. And maybe this one, maybe what we discovered is that, like, having an easier way to vote is better. So maybe we try to find a secure way to make an easier vote better so we can get the most votes. Or we have to realize that it doesn't work, right? Obviously, getting an accurate vote is more. People say every vote should count. I agree with you for sure. But getting an accurate vote and making sure the actual will of actual people is represented, that's more important than fucking maybe throwing out one that looks a little suspicious because you're too dumb to fucking read the instructions. You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be a line somewhere.
Yeah. Well, fucking, how about, you know, we all have to play by the same rules and have it. And how about no more mail-in? No more fucking absentee. You got to show up.
Yeah,
I'll take some guesswork out of it, unless you're in the military. But how about you got to have your vote in by the end of the day of November fucking 3rd? They knew what they were doing, the Dems. They knew Trump was winning on election night, and this is how it was planned. That's why they did the whole COVID, don't show up, mail in your ballots, because they knew. They knew mail-in ballots were way more susceptible to being fucked with. So once they saw that number at the end of election night, they knew what they had to do. Numbers wise to top Trump. I mean, this is no doubt this was planned ahead of time.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen? Will there be a recount, and will this change? Is there a possibility that this is overturned?
Well, some states have to recount based on their, like, state bylaws.
Georgia,
Georgia, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? I would hope so. I would think. I mean, some of the shit they did was downright unconstitutional. Not letting people in, you know, to watch the polls. Not letting people enter. In Detroit, they had cardboard in the windows of some of the places.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like this. And you watch these left-wing networks, and they're going, Trump and the Republicans made another baseless accusation. Baseless? I'm watching on other channels people who actually worked there. Project Veritas went undercover and interviewed some people at the post office in Detroit. They had to disguise the guy's voice. And he was told by his superiors to stamp shit that came in late as November 3rd. What? Baseless? What are they talking about? There's a ton of evidence out there. So, and you got Giuliani in the mix. So I feel good about it. I mean, that guy took on the mob in New York City and won. So
in the 70s. Yeah.
He'll get to the bottom of it.
In the 70s when it meant something.
Yeah. Like, was that was actually the 80s, late 80s, but yeah.
Well, the fact that Giuliani is still alive is
is a miracle.
That's a testament.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
An absolute miracle. I watched that Comey Rule special on Showtime, and that was one of the guys that they were most worried about was Giuliani. Mm. For whatever reason, he always gets the information first, and he's infamous for leaking it to the press before everybody else.
Well, I mean, yeah. Giuliani is to being an attorney general, I suppose, or mayor, as Phil Jackson is to coaching a basketball team.
Yeah.
Like, he puts the information out in public to get the desired effect. He's a very smart man. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where all this goes. We'll see. I mean, it's hard to tell what's going on right now. It's hard to tell because, let's be frank, Trump has been pretty flexible with the truth a lot of times. And it's not because he's not an honest person, I don't think. I think it's because he's a fucking braggadocious alpha dude that's always talking shit.
Yeah.
And he thinks and he's also like negotiating in public when he's doing that. People don't realize it, but that's what he's doing. It's the same thing that Phil Jackson did back in the day. So
absolutely. But through
still,
the press.
Yeah, of course. But there's still the result of having been perceived as loose with the truth. Yeah. And that now cascades over everything. So are there real issues or not?
He's perceived that way because, once again, they kept saying he was a liar from day one. I don't remember people fact-checking fucking Obama or counting every time he lied. And at least when Trump lied, it was about maybe the size of the crowd his inauguration, not about fucking Obamacare and one-fifth of the economy. That was a real doozy. I mean, once again, it comes down to the media's, you know, fucking covering for the left.
I agree.
I mean, Trump, I'll make the argument, he's been the cleanest guy to sit in the Oval Office.
Oh, he has to be, because if he wasn't, they would have prosecuted the shit out of him, right?
That's what I'm saying. Let's be real. That's all they got is his taxes?
Yeah.
I mean, which he, you know, did nothing illegal. He does what good businessmen do. But that's all they found on him so far?
Right.
You could argue, you know, he's he likes to grab pussy. Who doesn't? So did Hillary. Didn't hold that against her.
Oh, shit. Look, we can rage on the election all day. We're gigantic. Look, we're gigantic fans of yours.
Thank you, fellas.
I would like to talk about some of your career, because you've worked with the very best, in my opinion, comedian-wise, in your life. I'm going to throw some names at you here, and I want to ask you what they were like to work with. I know that Chris Rock offered you a writing position on The Chris Rock Show.
Yeah,
and you end up writing for two seasons. What's he like in real life, and what's his story?
That was Louis C.K. was there as well, right?
Yes, Louis was influential in getting me in there, was the most fun job I ever had in show
gotta
business.
Gotta be.
I mean,
with that
it was
crowd
so loose, and I was in L.A. at the time, and I knew Chris a little bit through New York, so he had seen my stand-up. And then I'm doing a show one night in Pittsburgh. I'm at the Funny Bone on a Friday night. And the second show, I'm on stage for about 5 minutes, and the manager comes up and hands me a note, and it says, bring up Chris Rock. And I look to the corner, and Chris is standing in the corner. And I'm like, what the fuck? I guess he was shooting a movie in Pittsburgh.
Really?
So, yeah, so he comes on. First, I said to the manager from the stage, I go, I'm still getting paid for this, right? He's like, yeah. So I bring Chris on, and then we went to a titty bar after. And then, a week later, my phone rang, and he wanted me to write on his show, and I go to, you know, and I was looking for a reason to get out of LA. I was so miserable, so I moved back within 3 days after getting that phone call. And I mean, I have my own corner office on the 23rd floor of a skyscraper, and it was such a loosey-goosey atmosphere. And it would be really funny. We'd do a pitch meeting in the morning. There'd be half the there was both black and white working there, but a lot of I'd say a little more black as far as the staff, sure. But I would always pitch something, and they'd look at me, you know, like, this, what the fuck did he just say? but Chris is like, that's why I hired him, you know? Mm. I used to defend Giuliani, and this is when they all hated him and stuff. So, but yeah, Chris is a good look. Like, he's like any other black guy. He doesn't like white people, but it's true. They fucking hide it, but he respects that I give it right back, you know? And he knew I was funny, and I loved that job. And he would come in, on a warm day, he'd go, it's 80 degrees, 85 degrees. It's 1 in the afternoon, it's noontime. He goes, fuck it, let's go to the Yankees game. We all get up, and we go to the Yankees game and sit right down front. And I went to a game. I got a call from Chris after I had worked for him about a year on a Saturday morning. He goes, DiPaolo. I go, what? He goes, you want to go to Mets game? I go, yeah. He goes, okay, meet me and Jerry Seinfeld in front of the gate 31 or some shit. So I went to the game with Chris and Jerry, who I knew a little bit. We're at the fucking Mets game. And it's so funny because somebody took a picture that was in like People magazine. Uh-huh. And this sums up my career perfectly. You can see Jerry's face. You can see Chris's face. And you see like the side of my nose. That just summed up my career in a nutshell.
I actually think Ross's dream in life is to die in an airplane crash where he's the most famous person on the crash.
Yes, dude. Yes.
That's all he wants in life.
That's all I want. I want to die in an airplane crash where I'm the most famous. So that way it says New York Times bestselling author. And comedian dies in a plane crash with 131 other people.
Right.
That way I get
your
the top
best-selling
headline.
Author?
Yes, yes. But
really?
Yeah.
What was the book?
It was called Thank You for My Service. Mm-hmm. I actually got to write it. It's about my best friend who was in the military, and then I have three other books.
Yeah, he's one of the bestsellers. It's Matt Best. He's one of the owners of Black Rifle Coffee. I know you like those guys.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes.
I've got one of your T-shirts. I've actually worn the T-shirt on this show.
Well, this is a T-shirt from them as well. It's the Pornhub logo, but with Black Rifle on it.
Yeah.
Now, guns and pussy.
Yeah, well.
Yes. That's what we do best around here. It's what we do best around here. Yeah, I don't want to be the Ann friend. Like, I'm sure when that People magazine picture came out, it was like Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and a friend were at the Mets game.
They don't even mention and a friend.
Yeah, but if these
like
days,
Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and the side of somebody's nose.
In 2020, if it's and a friend, that just means like Cabana Boy or some
Cabana
shit.
Cabana
right?
Boy, yeah.
Something.
Fluffer.
Fluffer.
Gay lover.
He follows me around with a pillow, and on top of the pillow, there's a fucking piece of glass covered in cocaine.
Yes, that'd be great.
Actually, now that I think about it, let's do that.
Congratulations. We're going to hire that. We're going to hire that here. You did Letterman. What's David Letterman like in real life?
Who knows?
Really?
He doesn't really. He's very aloof.
I get that feeling when I watch his. I watch that Netflix show, and my next guest is. And I get the same exact feeling, man, of like no one really knows him. I don't know any of his real friends in real life. And when he's talking to these celebrities, it seems like they don't know him either, where it's just like, all right, great, we're going to do this thing for an hour. But what the fuck does Letterman do in real life? You don't know him?
No, he's notorious for that. He makes fun of himself for that. He would just, you know, show up in the limo. He'd drive into work, actually. And then, you know, even when you're at the set, like when I was waiting, if he was coming down the hall, they would tell you to go into the dressing room or whatever the fuck. I don't think anybody knows. But, I was so happy to do that a couple times. And they actually asked me to do it a third time. I went to see one of my buddies doing the show. And the girl, naturally, says, if you'd like to do it again, but you can't do cancer. You can't do. She lists like four things. And I just said, it's all right. I'm good.
You're like,
I did. I saw myself and people don't get the essence of me on TV. But my first set was a monster on there. And the second one wasn't bad either. Letterman writes, okay. And like he doodled it on the card. They gave it to me after the show.
No shit.
But like going up, okay, I got like eight applause breaks for fuck's sake.
What about, tell me about the greater Boston, Massachusetts comedy scene back when you were coming up. I mean, we're talking about you and Dennis Leary were over there. Fucking Stephen Wright, Mario Cantone.
Those guys are a little ahead of me.
Patrice O'Neill's time, right? Rather.
I was even a year or two ahead of Patrice, I think.
Yeah.
But, oh my God. Like they say in Goodfellas, it was a glorious time.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be a gangster.
Clark.
It was unbelievable. The whole world was, this was like I started in like 87, 88. Mm. It was the hottest place on earth for comedy. And, I started with Louis C.K. and we ended up being roommates in New York for a year and a half or so. It was crazy. There was so much stage time. After I did like my fifth or sixth open mic, some guy comes up to me from the crowd and says, we opened a comedy club across town in Boston, Dick Doherty's Comedy Vault, and we'll pay you $25 or $50 a set. I had only done like six open mics, and I'm like, holy shit. So I would spend my Fridays and Saturdays like every weekend at Dick Doherty's Comedy Vault, making like, you know, a couple hundred bucks. And then Barry Katz was the big manager. He signed me. He booked every club, you guys, you got to understand this. It's changed so much. We were so lucky back then.
Yeah.
Every restaurant and pub had a comedy night. I'm talking not just Massachusetts, all of New England, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Vermont. On Monday night, I'd be at Stitches in Boston. On Tuesday night, I'd be at a Chinese restaurant in Rhode Island. On Wednesday night, I might be doing a college gig at UMass. Thursday night, I'm at a ski lodge in Vermont. Friday night, I'm back at Nick's in Boston. And I'm telling you, my first full year of comedy, I worked 300 and some odd nights, like 320 nights. And we got good so fast because that's the whole key, stage time.
Yep.
And me and Louie and the guys that came up with us, we thought that's the way it is. You know,
it was like, no, it is. But, that is the way it is, because it's the only way that works. Like people
but not anymore. I mean, there were no bringer shows.
Yeah.
You go to an open mic in the 1980s, there'd be 140 people in the audience.
Right.
Yeah. At an open mic.
Yeah. Now it's like, I've seen I saw Jim Gaffigan in like a 15,000 person theater one time. It's huge.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is Jim. I mean, he's funny as fuck for sure, but this is a big stadium for Jim.
Look, comedy's gotten bigger, and I guess since we're talking about it,
I think dialogue-driven comedy has gotten bigger.
Well, I'll say this: so everybody and their mother's getting a Netflix special, right? And especially anybody who's got a big podcast or whatever. What is your feeling on that? Do you watch any of these younger comedians who don't have a lot of stage time, and magically they're getting an hour on Netflix? And do you think they're any good?
First of all, not everybody's getting a special on Netflix. Not if you're a white, straight, honest male. I'm serious. Look at all the fucking specials. It looks like a Benetton ad. There's, if you're transgender, seriously, black, lesbian woman. I remember they did those short specials that were like 15 minutes or something. Remember they did like 30 of them a couple years ago?
I
looked at, there were two straight guys who were on the borderline of being straight. But they wouldn't even fucking look at me. I mean, so fuck Netflix. I mean, I'd have to be a Puerto Rican with a glass eye and a donkey.
But do you find any do you find any of the comedy interesting enough for you to watch? Or
fuck
you,
no.
Yeah, you're just.
I don't even watch. Even when I was on Comedy Central, I wouldn't watch other comics. It's like, I don't know. It's like being an accountant and going to work early and watching the other accountant. I think the best way to create your own persona is not to get too influenced. I check it out. I want to stay up to date with the young funny guys. Yeah. I'll hear them on the radio and stuff. But no, are you kidding me? Fucking, what was that broad's name from England? Who was the transgender
comedian?
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
She had
the
big special. Remember, she was talking about being raped and shit. And
oof.
Man.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't see that one either. Yeah.
No.
That was like the biggest comedy special. That was like 3 years ago. Mm. Jason, do you remember her name? Let's call her the ugly twat.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have a race between producers here on our side, and we'll try to figure it out.
But it's all liberal horse shit. They're not going to put on anybody like me or Colin Quinn or fucking. Well, they'll do Quinn's one man shows, but it's what? Hannah Gatsby.
Oh, Hannah Gatsby. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Watch that. Go. Yeah. It's nothing more funny than fucking rape stories when you're a child. I'm just saying. Netflix can kiss my ass.
It's weird how we come to these conclusions, because it seems like as a culture we've decided to just not believe that math exists anymore, right?
Yeah.
Let me run you through this. So comedy, particularly stand-up comedy, is all about observational, and the only way that works is if other people relate to what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
And the people that are like you, who often look like you, are often the people most likely to relate to that. Makes sense?
Yeah.
Some people are in aberrant situations. Some people are not. So the
Which is bullshit.
The fact that 70% of the country is white.
You can't relate to, and I mean, I can't relate to fucking when I was a 14-year-old white boy to Richard Pryor. That's the mentality that's
right.
It's identity politics. It turns everything to shit that it touches. And that's the mentality. You're right. You know, you have to have a Latino night, a fucking Asian night. Really? I can't laugh at an Asian comic who, is telling a story about being drunk or whatever. I mean, it's that mentality they have a split up to a,
What
it's friggin' silly to me.
What do we know about when someone tries to divide us, that typically means they're trying to conquer us, right? That's where
that's right.
Yeah. That's where that phrase come from. So when I see this stuff, this very heavy-handed divisiveness, it's irritating to me. Like, if Donald Trump says that there's a lot of good people on both sides, and your first inclination is to call the president a white supremacist, then you've done a disservice not only to the truth, but you've done a disservice to the dialogue, which is way more harmful. Now there are a bunch of people who are, you know, say what you want to say about it, but they're fucking dumb and impressionable. Now they believe this stupid thing you said. The media in this country has got to fucking go. We have to hit the hard reset button.
It's the fucking white liberals. That's the ones who do the most damage when you know, white privileged kids are out there with Antifa or whatever.
Yeah.
They're the ones doing the most damage, just reinforcing to black people that you're a victim and it's unfair. I mean, the way they talk, it's still 1958. It's fucking...
Well, Dan always calls it the oppression FOMO,
yeah.
Where there really wasn't anything for the white kids to get angry about in this generation. But they read about all the stuff that used to happen, and now they have a fear of missing out on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're recreating it with Antifa and all that shit now.
Yeah.
But look, it's only going to continue. How was Howard Stern, by the way? He was one of my favorites back in the day. He seemed to go on super left. I know you've been on his show numerous times. What's his story in real life?
I have no idea. Same. I haven't listened to him since I was on the show.
Really?
I heard he changed his whole persona and turned into a big sellout. I liked him when I did the show, and I mean, he was a good guy. He'd put me on a few times, and I thought he was funny when he'd go on Letterman stuff, when he was being irreverent, and he'd do some really harsh racial shit, and, you know, it's funny when you're making a radio station or TV station zillions what you can get away with.
Mm,
so, yeah. But I haven't listened to that show in forever, you know? So I don't know.
It seems like he just has on celebrity guests now, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much. And look, he's getting $120 a year out of Sirius, so
that would be 120,000 people.
Nope.
Yeah. Not a prayer. It's 120 million for that guy. God damn it, Nick. I hate to interrupt you, but you know the rules. You got a podcast. We got some sponsors who put this fucking shit wagon on the air. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. D'Anthony,
yep.
Did you crash like I did this weekend? This was brutal.
Yeah, I mostly slept the last couple of days.
Yeah. So did I. Yeah. I used the remote control in my ghost bed to move myself up and down, feed myself.
The only thing they could add to it at this point is a catheter and maybe a mini fridge.
Yeah.
And I'll never have to move again.
Ever again. Luckily, Gam Gams was in town, so it got to the children's.
Right.
So I was able to sleep like a little tiny king in a ghost bed from ghostbed.com/drinking bros. If you're a member of the military, a first responder, a teacher, or work in the government, you get 30% off everything in the entire store. Mattresses, sheets, adjustable bases, you name it, so you get 30% off. If you're a regular dummy like myself, you get 25% off a mattress and two free pillows right now. And the pillows, I can promise you, are just as good as the goddamn mattress. I love this fucking company. They've got a monstrous Black Friday sale that is coming up that we're looking forward to. So go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros today, where, as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there at ghostbed.com/drinking bros.
Oh, shit.
And it's applicable with all these deals.
Yeah, this new one is 30% off site-wide. If you order a mattress or bundle, they're going to throw in two free pillows.
30% off now?
Yeah.
I said 25. I was wrong.
No, it's 30% off now. Starting on November 3rd until whenever. I mean, you know how Ghostbed is.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, yeah, this is our Christmas sale. And it's like, well, it's fucking June.
Yeah.
Look. I would get it while the getting's good, because they usually change it up. So keep an eye on what the deals are. But
30% off is a lot.
Their bundles are dope. The number one bestseller is the adjustable base combo bundle, I think, which is the mattress plus the base.
Yep.
You can get like a king and two twins, or you can get two twins and two twins, basically, so you can move them independently. There's all kinds of different options there. They're fucking dope.
I'd like to have two twins and a king, if you know what I'm saying.
Like, what if it was King Ralph, though? It's John Goodman.
Yeah. I'd get down in a foursome with with John Goodman
and two twins, and the two twins are the Menendez brothers.
Ah, then I wouldn't want to be in that.
I don't know if they're twins or not. Actually,
I think they're twins. Yeah,
maybe.
I think so. I think they're fraternal.
Yeah. Either way, so it's John Goodman, you, the Menendez brothers, and a ghost bed. What
not
happens?
Not the sexual fantasy that I was hoping for,
no.
Dan.
Well,
not the sexual fantasy I was hoping for. But look, maybe you can get one of the toupees that the Menendez kid wore in a boxofawesome.com. That'd be a great gift, wouldn't it? It's just like, hey, man, here's a surprise. Here's what's inside of a box of awesome. It's one of the toupees from the Menendez brothers.
Do they wear wigs?
One of them wore a wig,
oh,
yeah,
that's,
man.
That's embarrassing.
I think he had alopecia.
That reminds me of Marv Albert when he went on trial. He, like, gave his wig a haircut.
Yeah, yeah.
Dennis Leary does a really good bit on that. Who is also one of Nick's really good friends.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Leary, yeah. He's been on everything Leary's done. He's been on it. And they all came from Massachusetts, right?
Nick took a piss break, so he's not in the room. Remind me to ask him about it because I'll forget.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I'll probably forget anyways. Yep. But Box of Awesome is they're back and better than ever. From style to grooming goods, barware, cooking tools, outdoor gear. They got everything, man. Shit. I've gotten meat cleavers. Goddamn whiskey decanters, travel bags, dop kits, you name it, dude.
Each cast iron frying pan, I
guess. Yes, dude. Each box only costs $45, but they have over like $70 worth of shit inside of it, sometimes 100. You get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up for boxofawesome.com with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkouts. It's boxofawesome.com, promo code Drinking Bros off your first box at checkout. I'm telling you, man, I've had a subscription to this for 2 years now at this point.
Give yourself a little gift, man.
That's it.
Life's tough sometimes.
Goddamn right. It's tough today.
Little special surprise once a week or once a month, rather.
I got an election hangover today. I hope there's a fucking box of awesome when I get back to my house today. Go to boxofawesome.com, promo code Drinking Bros, 20% off your first box. Last but not least, dear God, man, I've been mainlining this for days now. Yep. LiquidIV.com. Holy shit. Yes, we are the Drinking Bros. We've drunken ourselves to death, I feel like, over the last 2 weeks with all this shit. The only thing that has kept us back in the game is Liquid IV every single morning, dude.
Yep.
Drinking a bottle of it right now as we speak. Liquid IV is the very best in the business as far as getting yourself rehydrated, getting that body back where it needs to be. And this new one here, Dan, this immunity supports.
Yeah, I just sent Brittany a bunch of that stuff. It's actually, that's one of their best flavors now.
It is, man. I'm a huge fan of this.
And
the
they just came back
too, man.
The energy one's good. They just came out back out with the strawberry flavor, which was one of my favorites, and they got rid of it, but now it's back too. So
I have not had the strawberry, but I live and die off the immune support drink mix that they have. What it is, it's just one of those paper pouches, man. You rip the top off, throw in about 16 ounces of agua of your choice, dude, and that doubles you up. You'll be rehydrated like that. If you're fucking hungover, I can promise you there is no better product in this life than liquidiv.com. Right now, you can go to their website, liquidiv.com, use the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout, and you're going to get a big boy savings worth of 25% off. Look, I know they have this shit at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Pay full price, or you can get it online at liquidiv.com. Use the promo code Drinking Bros for 25% off. You can't walk into Walmart and say, listen to Drinking Bros, I want 25% off.
Well,
tough
you,
shit.
You can do that.
Can you really?
I don't know if it'll be effective or not.
No.
I mean, especially if you say it the way you said it right there, you're probably going to get arrested.
You're not getting Drinking Bros, 25%. No, you're not going to do that. Get it online.
Yeah.
Go to liquidiv.com, promo code Drinking Bros, 25% off at checkout. Nick, I apologize, but you get it. He's back from taking a piss. How great was Patrice O'Neal, by the way? We always hear the legend of Patrice, man, and whether or not he could have been one of the greatest of all time.
He is one of the greatest of all time.
He could, yeah. Well, like anything else, his stock went up after he died.
Of course,
I fucking, you know, I knew him as good as anybody, and he was so goddamn funny. Mm. And he's from Boston. He had that shitty, arrogant Boston attitude, and you know, we would slice each other up. And I was so that when he died, that really was a kick to the gut, because him and I would just clash, you know, bang head. And we did a thing called Shorties Watching Shorties together on Comedy Central that people still ask about. And I think the reason it ended because the guy who did the animation got in a contract dispute with Cop. Otherwise, me and Patrice probably would have been rich after a couple of years. But he was so goddamn funny and just sitting at the table busting balls. His stuff on relationships and men and women is his comedy gold to me. The shit that he would used to say, and I would say, well, you get away with it because you're a big black dude. I say it, I'm a fucking sexist misogynist pig, and he would agree. He would laugh in my face.
Well, you got to know who you are. I mean, his take on American exceptionalism is one of my favorite all time jokes from his stand up, and basically he's talking about how not only do Americans not know who everybody else's president is, we don't give a shit. Like,
right?
It's like, do you even know who our president is? And like. No, I don't know. He's like, well, it's like, no, I don't want to hear that shit.
Yeah.
I don't got time for that. Get the fuck out of here. That's one of my very favorite jokes of all time, and it really does kind of encapsulate the American spirit a little bit.
Right.
It's like, come on, man. Shut the fuck up. We're doing shit. I love that dude.
He was a special
guy. He was, and that laugh, man, that contagious. I drove up to Montreal with him to do the comedy festival, and it was me and him and his white Escalade, and there was a couple of comics in the back. I don't even remember who. But the shit that we weren't even out of the parking lot in New York. The shit that we were saying to each other about black and white people. If they filmed it, we would have been trillionaires. It was 5 hours of just stabbing each other with the most racist fucking shit.
Well, you, I guess...
And laughing, both laughing.
You know? Of course, of course.
You kind of know what it's like then to be in the military.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a little that. Like there are no holds barred. When you have to be close enough to somebody to anticipate everything about them, there can be no barriers. Race, whatever the fuck it is. You just have to light each other up. The only way to do it, it's almost like cognitive behavioral therapy. Like I say so much fucked up shit to you that I know... we both know the only way we get away with that is there is nothing between us but trust, right?
Right.
Like it's and we've lost that. This entire generation has lost it. Actually, the baby boomers started losing it, and now we're pretty much on empty on that. And it'll be interesting. That's why I say it's interesting to see what the next generation will do, because children are contrarians. They're gonna fucking come back the other way, right? So what's that gonna look like?
Who knows.
Well, they're going to come back the other way if academia isn't where it is today. If it's
right,
if it's still far left, they're going to be just like the zombies they've been turning out. But yeah, absolutely, busting balls. The country it's been feminized. Fucking PC is based in sensitivity. That doesn't come from men. We have acquiesced to it now. It's our fault for letting it get this far. But it's like a chick's way of thinking. I don't know a guy that's going to put on a fucking bike helmet to go for a ride on Sunday through the fucking woods, or we've just bought into it. And then I pointed it out on Tough Crowd 20 years ago. I was the first one to point out how the husbands are treated in commercials and white males and shit. And it's only gotten worse every goddamn year since then. So it's kind of a feminized way of thinking, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Worrying about COVID. Remember with put on a condom, you know? They had the people scared of sex like it was the most dangerous. That's not in the DNA of a fucking guy.
We raw dog. We never pull out.
Yeah, that's never. Who we are. Not once.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck it. I'm all drunk. Right. Who cares?
Exactly. Last but not least here, before we get out of here, I'd love to ask you your craziest Artie Lang story.
My craziest Artie Lang story is... I wasn't involved in this one, but it's one he told me about himself.
Okay.
Which you probably, I don't know if you've heard before, but he was up in Albany doing a gig, and he did like two shows, whatever. So it's like midnight, and he's fucked up beyond belief. And he decides he was going to stay there, but he decided that he wanted to go back to New York. So he calls a cab and gives a cab driver like $400-$500 in cash. Mm-hmm. Albany's about 2.5-3 hours from New York City.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So so he gives the guy the cash and makes the guy pick up like a large Sicilian pizza. And he sits in the front seat with a guy and they're eating the fucking pizza. And Artie is like, he's on drugs. He's fucking drunk. He's everything. he makes him pull over and he gets in the back seat so he can sleep, right?
Uh-huh.
So he wakes up a couple hours later. He wakes up. He feels like he's going to be sick. They're almost in New York. I guess they're in New York, actually. They pull off the highway. Not that far out of New York. And they pull into a gas station that was closed. And Artie opens the back cab door, and he's puking his brains out. And the cop car pulls up, and the fucking cop shines that giant light in his face. Artie can't see anything. All he hears from behind the light is, "Artie!" And the cops just get in the car and took off. That's how fucking famous he was.
That's
the
good.
The cop just went, "Artie!"
Meanwhile, every time Tommy Chong or Chong tries to go into Canada, they stop his car and search it.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Just leave that man alone.
You get to a level of fame and you should be good. You should be good. Now's the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of
the week.
Well,
let's be real. Artie was only doing damage to Artie back then.
Yeah, still doing damage to himself now.
Leave him the fuck alone.
He's fine. Artie's fine. Now's the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who's inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to, Nick?
One second. Can I just tell you one more quick Artie story again? My favorite one. It's not even involves him. It's his uncle. He had a real blue collar Italian uncle, Sal. Artie comes. He was staying at Artie's apartment for a week or something. So Artie comes home one night, and his uncle's watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
What the fuck?
And Artie goes, "Uncle, what are you watching?" He goes, "Jew broad fighting Draculas."
Oh boy.
Jew broads fighting Draculas, plural.
Well,
it's
accurate.
It's accurate.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Technically, that entire sentence is accurate.
Yes.
So how can you get mad at just accuracy?
No, you can't.
So what did you want me to do? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the premise of the
award. Not at all. We do this thing called the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who's inspired you, helped you become the person you are today, or somebody who's helped you out in your career. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
I think the priest that molested me.
Yeah.
Great.
Did you get touched?
Got me into the drugs, which, no. somebody that helped me. Oh, you know who it would be? Seriously. It would be my manager, Tommy Nicky.
Great.
Finally came into my life late in my career and knew exactly what to do with me. And he went to Penn State. He got like 2 wrong on his SATs. He's 6'5", 350 pounds, Sicilian and Jewish. Scariest dude you'll ever meet, smart as a whip, and I would say he's done more for me in the last 3 years than 27 years of all my agents combined and managers, so I would give it to Tommy Nicky.
Fuck yeah, nice. It's great.
It's a good one.
Nick, man, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You're one of the very best to do it. I know you say you're not famous. To us, you are. As soon as we hear your voice, I think everybody knows your voice in America. So
I do have a Jay Leno nasally voice, but I appreciate it, guys. I like to do the show again when you'll have me back.
And anytime.
It's nice to be with some guys that still have some testosterone left and, I'm not afraid to push back against the mob.
Yeah, there's only a couple of us left. We also host a huge sports show. We know you're a sports guy. We'd love to have you on that sometime. Okay. So let's stay in touch, man. And tell everybody where they can find you on social media and everything.
At Nick DiPaolo on Twitter. But you got to go to nickdip.com for my show that I do Monday through Thursday. We drop it at 5 p.m. Eastern time. That's nickdip.com. And then again, don't forget the live streaming show, my stand-up show from Las Vegas, Nevada on November 21st. It's a Saturday night. We'll be streaming it live. And also go to thecomicsgym.com. That's going to be my new platform. That is it.
Fantastic.
Thank you guys so much.
We appreciate you being here. For Nick DiPaolo, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.